Live from New York, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be looking at two grapefruit compounds that can act to help your DNA stop cancer. Also, how a powder that hasn't been used in a long time, but was once the primary source of vitamin C, rosehip powder, is improving joint mechanics, inflammation. Good study there. Also, fast food fever. Modern diets are impacting our immune health, and it's not good, from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. Also, vitamin C deficiency can wreak havoc on your thyroid function. What does that mean? How can you reverse it? And much more on health and healing. Then we're going to look at an interesting comment from Professor Paul Ehrlich, and it's entitled, How Humans Cause Mass Extinctions. He makes some very salient points. Also, the oligarchy recovery. Renting in America is most expensive ever. Mike Krieger will talk about what are its options. How did we get here? How can we reverse it? Also from our environmental section today, how many people die each day that's at least recognized of dying from pollution in China? What do you think the number is per day? And this is an official statistic. Additionally, today, we're going to look at fascism, and this is our talkback segment. I'm concerned that it is accelerating, and particularly from the left. We are seeing no longer it being hidden in some form of Blue Dog Democrat or Clinton Democrat. It's just the psychopathology of liberalism today. And we already know about the psychopathology of conservatism today as compared to what it authentically was at one time. Both liberalism and conservatism both serve very important roles at different times. What do they mean today? Norman Pollack, Counterpunch, then Talkback. Also, we'll have information today about the latest study of how good is science today. Well, the New England Journal of Medicine, Dr. Marcia Angell, published a paper, and wow, much of medicine today is untrue. Untrue. Well, then how would we know what part of science to report on or to believe in? Also, the Board of Regents of the American College of Physicians support eliminating all existing exemptions, except for medical reasons, for immunization laws. That means that the AMA is now supporting the mass vaccination campaign. And once it hits all the children in all the states, before you can exhale, it'll be mandating vaccines for all adults. We already know who's behind it. We know the legislation that's in committee. We'll talk about it. The right to grow your own food. That's a good idea. Well, it's being hijacked by the federal government. Christina Sarich of Natural News shows us the latest document. It's an executive order. Executive Order 13603, the National Defense Resources Preparedness. Who knew it even existed? Quote, all commodities and products that are capable of being ingested by either human beings or animals. That means they control it all. And I'll tell you about a phone call I got from a state official as a certified organic farmer wanting to know, what are you growing, how much are you growing, where is it being stored, how much of each item, where are your seeds, where are they stored? And when I ask, why is it any of your business? I'll tell you the response. and we will be taking your calls on our talkback segment later on. Plus today, the Trans-Pacific Partnership explained in a minute and 4 seconds in a different way. And for those of you who've wondered what's going on in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, we all want peace. Any reasonable person wants peace for both. The Jewish population should have a right to live in peace without fear, as should the Palestinians. Well, in comes the fly in the ointment, the Israeli settlements. And here it's explained. So you see, we have a lot of topics. First, let's start with the very basic, grapefruits. Now, grapefruits are great, especially in the summertime when you can take them out and cube them. You peel it and then you throw that into a blender. Then you put in some lemon juice on top of that, of 1 teaspoon of Manuka honey, which is a phenomenal healing honey. It's great for killing bacteria and staph and all forms of infections in your body. And then you put in a little vitamin C, and then you put in your water and you blend it. And you talk about with ice. You talk about quenching your thirst, but it also does a lot more. It can help protect your DNA to stop cancer. That's correct. We all understand that your DNA is your individual code. For example, all your unique qualities in life come through your DNA. It's therefore important that to protect your DNA from damage. However, reasonably speaking, we live in a world that we're all damaging our DNA. Now, I've never smoked or drank or, you know, taken drugs, any of that. And I'm not making a judgment against people who do. It's just speaking for myself, I want to see, well, how do you damage if you're not doing the obvious? Well, you could have a bad diet. You could have a lot of animal proteins or a lot of denatured fats. That'll do a lot of damage to your DNA. Or you could have a lot of sugars, especially high fructose corn syrup. Or you can eat a lot of fried foods. Or you could be on a lot of Americans are on sugar-free diets, but they're high in fat. Or they can be on a fat-free diet and high in sugars. All damaging to your DNA. You could overeat. That really damages your DNA, especially when our appetite determines how much we're going to eat. And generally, the stronger your appetite, the more likely you are to want to eat high nutrient, meaning fat or protein dense foods like a steak, because there's a certain mouthfeel, there's a certain satiety where a person feels, well, now I've eaten this meal, I feel comfortable. No, you're stuffed, and it's going to hurt your DNA. And of course, exercise, which is how I hurt my DNA, by training, in some cases, when training for the World Games, up to 25 miles a day on the road, plus climbing 25 flights of stairs 25 times, plus working out VersaClimbers, and all damages the DNA because the body wasn't meant to do a marathon. Can it do a marathon is a separate matter. Later, I would determine how to do a marathon and at least help the cells that are under attack. But that took a while to understand and to implement. So at the end of the day, all of us are living in an environment where we're exposed to multiple antigens or things that attack us. Now, here's how it works. Let's say you damage your DNA. You work in a paint company. The fumes, you're damaging a lot of DNA. But you're young, and you think, well, I'm young, my DNA will repair itself. In some cases, they will. But the older you get, the less it's able to repair itself. Let me just give you an example. Anyone who is a responsible owner of a car knows that you have to take it in on a regular basis, have the oil changed, have the spark plugs cleaned. You have to maintain it. But after, let's say, 100,000 miles, even being very diligent, it's not the same car as when it was new. And for all of us who have worked on cars, and we call it 100-point restoration, where we do a frame-off restoration. We take every single part out, and in effect, it's made new. And that is different. But we don't do that with our bodies. We don't have a frame-off restoration. The closest we could come to that would be to do a complete in-home guided by professional detoxification rejuvenation, which will take realistically about a year and a half to 2 years. Within 2 years, you could de-age your body by about 8 years at the biological level, and you'd also see noticeable physical changes. You'd be much younger, muscles tighter, more ripped, less fat, wouldn't have the abdominal fat and the thigh fat and the buttock fat. You'd have more energy, digestion better, energy through the roof, by the way, when you wake up in the morning, better night's sleep. All these things would happen because you would have really devoted your time to it. So, let's say that we are over 40 and we've done a lot of things that we should have done or shouldn't have done that we didn't know, but we injured ourselves. Now our body can't repair the DNA, not the way it was. So we end up having defective DNA. The defective DNA can lead to cancer. It can also lead to fatigue. So how can we stop that? Well, there's two things that definitely can and help the body repair its DNA and actually help stop cancer. Now write this down. It's a bioflavonoid. I've mentioned it before, but it's time because of a new study to mention again. It's found in all citrus in small amounts, but in grapefruit in big amounts. Hence, the grapefruit can now be listed as one of our most important anti-aging, anti-cancer foods. The nutrient is called naringenin. Narin, N-A-R-I-N, genin, G-E-N-I-N, naringenin. And it's extremely powerful. Now, here's how it works, according to a good study. The naringenin helps to repair damaged DNA, and it was also, in this study, shown to help the human prostate cancer cell stop growing. And naringenin was able to aid in restoring health to the damaged DNA through the induction of two enzymes that work during the cell replication stage. And most importantly, this worked with an amount of naringenin that is physiologically achievable in tissues. So that's important. And so consuming grapefruit regularly can be an excellent way to stop cancer. Now, granted, there has not been naringenin on brain cancer or liver cancer, but the fact that it worked on a cancer means that there's no reason not to project that it couldn't work on other cancers as well. And so that's important. Now, also, we have what is called resveratrol. That's the second ingredient, and you get that in grapes. So those of you who are eating grapes, always wash your grapes and with a veggie wash, and then agitate it in cold water, and then eat it. And the more you can find seeded grapes, chew on those seeds. Throw them in a blender. They're great for you. The skin of the grape and the seeds of the grape contain most of what is biologically active and healing in the body. And the resveratrol, anywhere from 50 to 200 milligrams a day is what you should have. When you start going above 200 milligrams, let's say 200 to 400, you're really super potentizing. That isn't also protects DNA. And here's the irony. The sicker you are, the better resveratrol helps restore the health of your DNA. So resveratrol directly, or grapes, or grape juice, or grape concentrate, or grape powder. And get your grape in there every day. And that's two nutrients to help protect your DNA and slow down the aging process. Now, from Copenhagen University Hospital, published in Gait and Posture, they found that the rosanoids are the active ingredient in rosehip, and this was used for 12 weeks, and it made an enormous difference on the biomechanics in the knee. Quote, "This is the first study to assess the efficacy of rosehip on the biomechanics of the knee joint during walking." And that was in the Department of Rheumatology, Copenhagen University Hospital. So that means that for those of you who have knee problems, if you take rosehip, which you can buy in any health food store, I would suggest maybe about 500 milligrams a day. And also, this is from the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease. The modern diet, what they're calling the Western diet, quote, can lead to poor immune functioning and increase the risk of inflammatory conditions, allergies, autoimmune. And this is what they say, quote, besides affecting immune function and our own health, modern diets could also code, meaning implant, into our DNA and our gut bacteria to pass on poor immune functions to our children. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal, Nutritional Journal. So, in lay language, here's what this means. When you eat the typical Western diet, bacon and eggs, coffee and toast for breakfast, or some form of cola or sweet roll, or have your grilled cheese sandwich or hamburger for lunch, and have your typical dinner with French fries, and what you're doing, you're creating negative bacteria, bad bacteria. You're also defecting the DNA. You're destroying your immune system. And this can lead to having diseases later in life. But if you do it and have a kid, the kid starts life with your defective DNA. So imagine the beauty and treasure and glory of a newborn baby. Shouldn't you take the time for a planned pregnancy and detoxify emotionally, spiritually, and physically for at least 2 years? Because it would take 2 years to do that right. Then you start that child with absolutely positive genetic expression, good bacteria in their body. And remember, a mother's breast milk and the mother, and people don't understand one of the built-in functions of life is for the mother to nurture the baby. It doesn't matter what culture, doesn't matter the kind of creature. I've seen it in chimpanzees, in elephants. Watch a cow right after she's given delivery and she looks around and sees this embryonic sac and she immediately licks off the sac. And then this little creature, this little heifer, starts to open its eyes and look around its environment. Now it's outside the protection of its mother's womb, and its tongue is darting around the barn, and it's picking up bacteria. And that bacteria normally would kill the baby, generally in a very short period of time. But immediately the mother is licking its face. And what the mother is doing, the mother is picking up the bacteria from the child, immediately creating antibodies, and then giving it as a natural immunization boost back through the breast, through the milk, the udder milk. A mother does the same thing. A mother looks at her baby, kisses the baby. The saliva from the baby goes on the mother's mouth. The mother then immediately starts to create antibodies, which she passes through in her breast milk, and hence naturally immunizing the baby. This is done all over the world. And if there wasn't the love hormone, that might not occur, but it does. So the stronger the immune system of a human or an animal, the stronger the immunity of their offspring. So when you see people smoking and drinking and stressed, and by the way, stress is one of the worst epigenetic energies you can implant into a DNA. And it is, it's implanted. And that's why some babies born are never as joyful. And because they've started off with that which was negative in the parent is now in their DNA. And this isn't superstition. This is a whole field of epigenetics. And finally, a good study on the role of vitamin C. If you are deficient in vitamin C, and most people are, then you could be one of the 30 plus million Americans who have some form of thyroid disease. And when you have an impaired thyroid, that is absolutely going to lead to other conditions. Gaining weight, losing hair, thinning of the eyebrows, fatigue. You can end up having altered heart, brain, muscles, liver from an underactive thyroid. And stress oxidative stress and emotional stress, chemical stress, all hurt the thyroid gland. So in a paper published in the British Medical Journal, Endocrine Disorders, it reported on the impact of thyroid function with vitamin C. So you need vitamin C for your thyroid. So make sure you're getting, I would say, between 2 to 5,000 milligrams a day on the low side. Take it in buffered form, and it can make all the difference in the world to your thyroid, which then affects your metabolism, which then gives you more energy, causes you to burn fat, feel better, sleep better, have better digestion. That's how powerful our thyroid is. And by the way, it helps to have a nice bowl of seaweed soup 2-3 times a week. I'm Gary Knoll. One thing on the environment, then we'll take a break. Question. The Chinese air pollution kills how many people every 24 hours? And mind the way, if this is an official figure, then you got to be aware that the unofficial real figure is probably 2 to 3 times this. It's 4,000 people every 24 hours in China. Quote, according to this study, 4,000 people die every day in China as a result of dense smog. Deaths related to the main pollutant, tiny particles known as PM2.5, that can trigger heart attacks, strokes, lung cancer, and asthma, total 1.6 million a year, or 17% of all Chinese death. And so, there you have it. It's really bad. What is that equivalent to? Well, let's put it this way. Let's take a look at Richard Mueller, who visited China, and here's what he wrote, quote, when I was last in Beijing, pollution was at the hazardous level. Every hour of exposure reduced my life expectancy by 20 minutes. Think of that. Every hour of exposure reduced my life expectancy by 20 minutes. And then the director of Berkeley Earth and co-author of the paper said, quote, it's as if every man, woman, and child smoke 1.5 cigarettes every hour of their lives. So that's how bad pollution is. So yes, they've had economic growth, but they're killing their people and the planet and our health in the process. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us. I would imagine that most of the listeners to this program are at times frustrated with our entire political process, be it liberal or Democrat, because they're irrelevant, because the true conservative, the true liberal, has been marginalized and cast out of virtually all consensus-making decisions in our society. Instead, what we have is we have the dominant male and female representing either some part of their own self-need, but always bringing into the picture the greater needs of those who support them, the oligarchs, the special interest groups. Norman Pollack has a good take on this, and I believe that we can learn, especially since, well, the Republicans are the designated whipping boys for reaction, covering a wide swath of political culture and thought and activity in America. The content is obvious, summarized as the militarization of advanced capitalism as it seeks to maintain its unilateral course of global supremacy. In the effort breaking down in a world of decentralizing power relations, and thereby forcing America to ever greater extremes of action in order to keep its place. And I was thinking about this morning as I was out on a country road doing a running session, and just in a moment it came into mind about why can't Americans simply start to live with less? Stop being massive consumers of everything and over-consuming, and hence over-polluting, and hence over-manufacturing, and generally in countries that are polluting, like China, to give us everything that we're over-consuming. And the excessive debt that it creates, the debt against the environment, the debt against the skies, the debt against the soil, the debt against the water, the land depletion, that less and less land is now available to grow crops. Why can't we just take a time out and reassess our lives? And then I thought about if the United States cut its military budget, which I believe it should, by 85%, we would still be spending more than the next two countries combined. So we're not spending money today on the defense of Americans. We're spending money into a giant vortex where those who are smart enough to create companies with generals and admirals and procurement officers in the different departments of defense offices to buy weapon systems or pay for its research and development. And then they hire these people when they retire. So you go from being the person that would say yes or no to a particular contract to now you're going back in that office to your left behinds. And in Washington, there's a famous term. It's called stay behinds. The stay behinds come with every administration. The administration comes in and appoints anywhere from 1,400 to 1,700 people. They become, most of them, permanent structures of the bureaucracy. But they're your people. You got them their job, and now they are either opinion leaders, they're technocrats, bureaucrats, or policymakers, but they're yours. So now you leave, and now you join a lobbying firm. And now the lobbying firm gets you into a new think tank, and the think tank gets you into a new company that's making a new surveillance system. And now you go back to that same office that you ran for 30 years, but you ran it as a general. And now you go back, and you're going back as a friend. And you give them your contract, and your left stay behinds look at it and nod, and everybody agrees, okay. And it's a $1 billion contract, or $5 billion. And every year it's going to get more. So now you've done your good deed. You can now know that you're going to make between $1 to $3 million a year, plus you'll have a Black American Express card with unlimited purchases. You'll have use of a private jet. You'll have any kind of high-end car that you want to lease. You'll have places around the world you can go. And did we need it? No, we don't need 95% of everything that is bid upon. The redundancy, the corruption, the inefficiency are all meant to protect industries and the paychecks and the bonuses. So we play the game. Wouldn't it be just simpler if we had a 1 year in American history where every politician and every lobbyist and every corporate person could simply go to Washington, walk into any office of any government agency, and be given a check for any amount they wanted. And they don't have to do anything for it because they don't anyhow. Nothing that we ever need that is relevant. And I thought about this. What would the average American say if they saw, well, today, $500 billion in contracts were given for nothing. For nothing. And now the stockholders are happy. The one-time diligent union members who put their money into pensions that are run by hedge fund managers who then buy up companies and fire the union management and downsize it and send it off to India as if there's no irony at all to anyone in any of this. And so they got another $1 billion for nothing. But at least if we could show we're giving you money for nothing that is essential to anyone except yourself, then that represents most of your state, local, and federal contracts. And most of your city council members, your state representatives, your governors, your mayors are all there to plead the argument on behalf of special interest groups more often than not and pretend to care about anything else for the rest of the time. That's how our government actually works. But that's not how we'd like to believe it does. So we live with the myth. And that myth is so serious. Here is the problem. We have this strange showing. We have integral racism in the historical national mindset, quiescent for a time and now once more erupting. Worldwide covert operations and meddling in others' internal affairs. Ongoing since the 1940s, but now so regularized. Let's be realistic and honest. Who is surprised today when anyone at any level of government engages in anything that is illegal, unethical, or immoral? We all know they do so with impunity and their stated urgency, so we don't even notice it. The use of trade is a battering ram for geopolitical and geostrategic purposes to shape the hegemonic balance of power with respect to China and Russia, while serving notice on U.S. partners of forcible financial commercial penetration so that all alike are destructively affected. In sum, we're real quick on the trigger, hammering out a stable ideological environment for America's true spirit of ethnocentrism and xenophobia, consciously and unconsciously working on behalf of a corporatistic system of widening differentials in wealth, power, racial, and ethnic superior-inferior rankings, a tightening of the screws on patriotic conformity, all of the foregoing wrapped tightly around the intensive concentration of business and banking power into an amoral, unrestrained, monolithic-based American protective cover. This is the crucial societal phenomena, a capitalistic monolith showing no mercy to real yet often imagined adversaries. Domestic critics silenced through self-castration. Look at the New York Times. I don't think they have anything left to castrate there, since they haven't done any honest reporting against real corruption in a long time. And the habituation to a submission to power via consumerism, the bread and circuses, and with massive surveillance, instinctive fear, and on the world scene, nations subtly awed by a nuclear arsenal second to none, and with $1 trillion more that Obama has promised, and hinting strongly, we're ready to use it. And those in power, supported by Netanyahu and his rabbles, that the U.S. should be at all times the preeminence. And we are the elitist. You either support us, you accept us, regardless of your party, or pay a consequence. In one sense, Republicans have had a bad rap. Not very bad, but Democrats being equally, if not more, responsible for unleashing the structure, planning, and energies of militarized capitalism. Obama is the perfect embodiment of the American emperor. A black president, an added convenience to liberals in sanctioning policies of intervention and apologizing for them as they backward out the door at the conquest. And here at home, of corporate consolidation. Even today, I was reading where more jobs will be lost, tens of thousands, because of consolidation of power. And yet, not even an irony. The stature earned as the intermediary for the American war machine and foreign policy establishment, as the mock regulator of the business system, the seemingly benign, because of race, representative of African Americans, though he does not represent African Americans. He represents America's ruling class. Yes, despite liberals' denials. A ruling class to which some members gladly serve. So, we proudly proclaim our Americanism, Republican and Democrat, world beaters, a happy consensus of exploiters, even or especially of our own, the message being one of pride, taken that, as citizens, many of us can only be victims of the systemic processes used to subjugate others. We are grateful to serve our masters, the Leviathan, the Menem, a rare privilege for this twofer alliance. But as for enemies, real or imagined, we should not blanch from the obvious. For some are real. America is hated, perhaps not universally, outside its boundaries. Then certainly where regime change has occurred, boycotts and embargoes have resulted in intense societal misery. Native habitats have been destroyed, military bases erected both for offensive operations and shoring up friendly domestic governments, and outsourcing imposed course of labor conditions and arrangements. In short, wherever the Imperium has flexed its muscles, usually the business and military communities, the driver's seat. Still, even real enemies are worn in American inner circles as a badge of honor, testifying to the efficacy of power and deity-enforced exceptionalism. Where the often imagined comes in concerns the psychological projections of aggression onto the others that we harbor for them. Russia and China are not about to destroy America, but America could never destroy either of those two countries. So why be bellicose? Why posture? Why act as if somehow you had found in an old closet a recording of McCarthy from the early 1950s, wiped it off, put it on, and now you're doing your own karaoke in the White House as if you're the modern-day McCarthy, because indeed you are. And dancing as if you're at Radio City Music Hall, as Mother Jones on one side and The Nation magazine on the other. My goodness, how pathetic it is. And yet neither seem to understand this. So pity the Republicans. They do not enjoy a monopoly on war preparation, war feeling, warmongering, surveillance to wealth, and subservience to no one. Despisement of the environment, both Democrats and Republicans. So you see, which of the two lesser of evils should we allow? I say neither. Time for third party and transformation, not reformation. I'm Gary Knoll. Those are my thoughts and Robert Perry's. I'd like yours. Give us a call now. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And while you're thinking of that, let us take a listen now to the Trans-Pacific Partnership explained in just 60 seconds.
If hundreds of corporate lobbyists write a trade deal that no one reads, will it still affect you? Yeah. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is the largest trade deal in US history, covering 40% of the global economy. It'll increase exports between 12 countries and impact jobs, food, the environment, and more. President Obama says it's good for everyone, but why are he and other leaders keeping it under lock and key? Four chapters were leaked, and here's what the critics say would happen if it passes. Corporations will be able to sue countries in secret tribunals for making laws that cut into their projected profits, like a cigarette company suing a country over packaging. It'll give Big Pharma a monopoly on drug patents, which will drive up the costs of drugs that treat illnesses like cancer and malaria. And the TPP also undermines internet freedoms. It forces service providers to police the net by cracking down on things like illegal downloads. So is this really a trade deal or a Trojan horse for multinational corporations?
Now, there has been questions that many Americans are not aware of, and that is there anything being done in the Middle East that is preventing the two parties, the Palestinians and the Israelis, from being able to work more cooperatively together for a just peace for both, which any reasonable person would want? Well, one thing that rarely gets discussed is the illegal settlements. Here it is explained in 3 minutes to give you a better understanding of at least one of the limiting factors. There are others, but this is an important one.
Conflict, and you'll hear that settlements are a major sticking point. Well, what exactly are they? Israeli settlements are residential areas built by Israel on occupied Palestinian territory, primarily for Jewish communities. But here's the thing, they are illegal under international law. In fact, these benign-looking suburbs are actually a violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention, according to the UN. Why? Because the Fourth Geneva Convention, which outlines protections for civilians in a war zone, forbids states from transferring their citizens to occupied land. But Israel has been doing exactly that since it occupied the West Bank in the 1967 war. By building these illegal settlements, Israel is trying to ensure it retains possession of that land even under any future peace deal. That's one of the main reasons why negotiations keep breaking down. While Israel insists that any agreement should allow it to keep most of the settlements, the Palestinians say they can't negotiate over land that Israel is continuously eating into. Since the start of the Oslo negotiations in 1993, the number of Israeli settlers on occupied Palestinian land has actually doubled to 500,000. And despite the fact that in 2005, Israel did withdraw settlers from Gaza and some from the West Bank, the total number of settlers continues to grow. So, what drives so many Israelis to live in these illegal settlements? Well, many settlers go out of the religious conviction that it's their right to live there. But religion aside, the Israeli government also encourages settlement by offering lower tax rates, subsidized housing, and easier loans. And even though the settlements are deep inside the occupied West Bank, their infrastructure directly connects them to Israel. The Israeli army is heavily deployed to protect the settlements. Over 200 kilometers of road have been built on Palestinian land for the exclusive use of settlers. And while Israeli settlers in the West Bank are bound by Israeli civil law, Palestinians there live under Israeli military rule, meaning they're subject to checkpoints, curfews, detention without charge, and other restrictions. That's life under military occupation. So, what does this all mean in terms of a solution to the conflict or a Palestinian state? Well, the physical presence of the settlements themselves have broken up the occupied West Bank into many small disconnected areas. And even though the built-up areas of the settlements make up barely 3% of the West Bank, the roads, military bases, and security zones that form the settlement infrastructure take up 40%. And it doesn't look like that number is getting smaller anytime soon. So, there you have it. Negotiations stop and start over how much land either side gets to keep in the occupied West Bank. And all the while, the Israeli government continues to build more and more settlements on that land every year.
Now, here's a piece from Christina Sarich of Natural Society. Quote, in a document quietly signed into law, your right to grow your own food was surreptitiously taken away and given to the federal government through the right of seizure given to the feds by the Fed, and it was a preemptive strike to make all Americans dependent upon, well, whoever grows their food, whether it's Syngenta, Monsanto, Dow, Bayer, etc. The document is entitled Executive Order 13603. It is entitled The National Defense Resources Preparedness. In this 10-page document, the federal government declares its right to seize control over, well, all forms of energy and all forms of water, but most alarming, quote, the federal government can seize at its will all commodities and products that are capable of being ingested. That means all food for humans and animals. This means food. And so we have that. Now, let us go back to a couple things that I'm a certified organic farmer, and I've been teaching farming. In fact, probably I estimated once that about 20,000 people from this radio audience over the decades have come to my upstate for 15 years. I had it in Stone Ridge and learned every weekend I would do in the summer. I would do gardening classes, farming classes, and people could take home with them all that they could carry of free produce. But they learned how to do this. And it was the first teaching farm in New York State. The only other one in the East Coast was Rodell's. I knew Rodell. I went down there in Emmaus. He had a huge one. Mine was tiny by comparison. But we actually had more people come and learn, clear up until, well, I'm still doing it. I'm still teaching people farming. but I don't sell the produce. What I grow, I give to church groups and for them to be able to help their parishioners who may be struggling at this time and or help others with, you know, the soup kitchens. That's what I do with the food. Well, in comes a phone call from the state. They want to know what I'm growing, how much I'm growing, where it's at. Do I have any of it stored? Do I have any in dry storage? Do I have any of it jarred, canned, pickled? Every single aspect. And they want me to be very detailed. For example, how many plants, actual number of plants, am I growing of everything, like radishes or lettuces? How many? And where exactly in your garden are they growing? Is in what section? And they want to see photographs of this. And then if you've picked up some preserves, you know, let's say you pickle, you know, some beets and garlic, and you have 10 jars. They want to know. They want to see the 10 jars. Where's it at? So when I asked the person, why do they want to know this? They said, well, because under the Homeland Security and under FEMA, they have the right to come in to your property, your home, and confiscate all of your food. And they want to make sure that if you've put in any in a cellar or any place that they know where it's at, so they can get that as well. So my question was in return, all right, let's say that I'm growing food and I have put up a year's worth of provisions, dried some, canned some, whatever it is, and have others fresh. What happens to my needs? And there was a pause on the phone. The person says, well, I can't answer that. You would have to go to, you know, one of the agencies and ask for some kind of help, I guess. I said, but I'm meaning I have to go and ask for some of my food back? And what would be the likelihood I would get it? Because they would take this to give whom? Because the government already has all of the food they need for any emergency. They have that on a regular basis. They have it stored. They have massive amounts stored. In fact, one of the largest compounds in the world is an underground city that was being built from the mid-1940s till today. Billions of dollars a year spent on it. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people could be housed there, and they have supplies. But then they said they were doing this to every single farmer in the state and in every single state. So I told them I would not comply. I said it was not. They said, you have to, because it's an executive order. I said, well, I'm not selling anything. And this year, my ground is fallow. So I had nothing to declare. But just remember, it all seems so abstract and existential until it happens to you, till an asset forfeiture happens to you, till a stop and search happens to you, to one of the impositions becomes your imposition, and then it becomes very real. Now, I remember interviewing Paul Ehrlich back in the 1970s. He's been around a long time. He's a very wise man. He wrote a very short piece called How Humans Cause Mass Extinctions. I thought you'd find it interesting. I'll share it with you. Here it is. There is no doubt that Earth is undergoing the sixth max extinction in its history, the first since the cataclysm that wiped out the dinosaurs some 65 million years ago. According to one recent study, species are going extinct between 10 and several thousand times faster than they did during stable periods in the planet's history. And populations within species are vanishing thousands of times faster than that. By one estimate, the Earth has lost half of its wildlife, half of all wildlife on the planet in the last 40 years. And there's no doubt about it, we caused it. We are it. We're in the process of killing off our only known companions in the universe, many of them beautiful and all of them intricate and interesting. This is a tragedy, even for those who may not care about the loss of wildlife. The species that are so rapidly disappearing provide human beings with indispensable ecosystem services, regulating the climate, maintaining soil fertility, pollinating crops, defending them from pests, filtering fresh water, and supplying food. The cause of this great acceleration is the loss of the planet's biodiversity, and it's clear. rapidly expanding human activity driven by worsening overpopulation and increasing per capita consumption. We're destroying habitats that make way for farms, pastures, roads, and cities. Our pollution is disrupting the climate and poisoning the land, water, and air. We are transporting invasive organisms around the globe and over-harvesting commercially or nutritionally valuable plants and animals. The more people there are, the more the Earth's productive resources must be mobilized to support them. More people means more wild land must be put under the plow or converted to urban infrastructure to support sprawling cities like Manila, Chengdu, New Delhi, and San Jose. More people means greater demand for fossil fuels, which means more greenhouse gases flowing into the atmosphere, perhaps the single greatest extinction threat of all. Meanwhile, more of Canada needs to be destroyed to extract low-grade petroleum from oil sands, and more of the United States needs to be fracked. More people also means the production of more computers and more mobile phones, along with more mining operations for the rare earths needed to make them. It means more pesticides, detergents, antibiotics, glues, lubricants, preservatives, and plastics, many of which contain compounds that mimic mammalian hormones. Indeed, it means more microscopic plastic particles in the biosphere, particles that may be toxic or accumulate toxins on their surfaces. As a result, all living things, us included, have been plunged into a sickening, poisonous stew with organisms that are unable to adapt further and are pushed towards extinction. And that's from Paul Ehrlich. Have you noticed how expensive it is to rent an apartment? Well, now it's expensive to rent a house. And that's because when the great crash came, 2007, people lost over 7 million homes. The banks took back the homes, and then they began to sell them at rock-bottom prices to inside groups of hedge funds and equity partners, who then began to bundle these into giant tranches, as just as they did the subprime homes. But this time it wasn't to resell them, it was to rent them. Now, I've suggested it to Jesse Ventura, to Ron Paul, to Ralph Nader, to Dennis Kucinich, to Jill Stein, to Rocky Anderson, and Gary Johnson. I suggested that there be a moratorium by the President of the United States, by executive order, who could do this, that would keep a person in their home, so no matter how little income they had, they only had to pay 15% of the income they earn. That means that even a person who had welfare could just pay 15% of their welfare and stay in the home. Why? Many reasons. One, because you then do not devalue other people's property. You do not allow that then to be used as a gang or drug, a house that destroys a neighborhood and the quality of life and poses a danger to people in that neighborhood. You also allow people a more humane way of dealing with their problems. You keep money in the economy. There was a time when a single dollar would change hands 67 times. Now it's like 8 times because your credit card doesn't circulate that profit back in the economy. But when you have some pocket money, you can go to the dry cleaners. You can go to a movie. You can go buy a pair of shoes. You can go eat dinner. You can exchange that with other people. And as long as someone still maintains a standard of living by living in a home, they're not under the stress. They're less likely to be stressed and have stress reduced substantially. Less heart attacks, less stroke, less obesity, less diabetes. Hence, you lessen the medical complications of death and injury and infirmary. You also reduce the debt upon society to pay for that through Medicare and Medicaid. You also continue to have what I call the good citizen concept, where citizens are still able to work with each other in a community. And you could have citizens' block associations that work to help the common good of the community, which means focusing upon the needs of those who are in trouble to see if collectively as a group you couldn't help them by giving them input. But at least you don't have blighted neighborhoods. That's the benefit of keeping people in their homes. Today, you don't spend 15% of your disposable income. You spend upwards of 50% of your total income on rent 30 to 50% is common. The trouble is you don't get a landlord that knows you. If something breaks, good luck trying to get it fixed. These people are strictly in it for the money. They never thought about what it means to actually control an infrastructure. So that is the bad part of that. So the oligarchs are in charge. They want to rent everything, and they want to rent it because they want to engage in vulture capitalism, exploit those who have the least so they can make even more. We need this changed. And I believe that we need a national referendum, state referendums, no more foreclosures, and let people back, because we could house every single homeless person in these abandoned houses and apartments. Plus, we could rehabilitate government office space. There's over 10 million square feet of empty federal, state, and local government space that could be rehabilitated for human habitation and services to the community. Mental health care services, drug services, child care services. But we're not doing any of that right now. Sorry I couldn't take your calls. My engineer let me know that we had a line that was not working. We'll do that tomorrow, however. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day. Something that can be